And it really confuses me how we've got to this stage in society, in progressive modern Western liberal democracies, where we all think that we're so wonderful and clever that, you know, we can tolerate the third gender, or we can tolerate all of this madness. It's like, no, get rid of it. There are Sharia courts in the United Kingdom. Mm. Get rid of them. They've been there for years. But ban, deport, remove, get rid of it. It's just, it's a logical solution to a problem rather than anything else. Hola, welcome to the yearly roundup. Or, I mean, there'll be some yearly roundupping and there'll be some.
It's the season finale.
There you are. That's why he's the
father,
and I'm the fox. The season finale of Fox and Father. Yeah. Will they? Won't they? Will Hollywood finally realize that there needs to be a TV show with, or a film with Calvin with two revolvers crossed over his body? I mean, will it happen? We all want it to happen.
It very may well happen next year. Who knows?
How are you doing in this period of Advent? Sorry, I know it's not Christmas yet. It's Advent.
Thank you. Yeah, we're getting there though. We're building anticipation for Christmas. We're excited for Christmas. Yeah, good. Thank you. I'm currently in Phoenix, Arizona. It's very sunny, very warm outside, enjoying a bit of a break from the Midwest winter. So that's nice. I'm at a Turning Point USA event right now. I spoke yesterday, so it's good fun. Here until Saturday. Donald Trump is coming here on Sunday. That's unfortunate. I'm going to miss him, but I'm going to go pick up my father and he's coming over for Christmas. So that'll be nice.
Dennis.
Yep. Dennis is coming over.
Oh man, that is going to be a proper Christmas.
That How are you?
Fun. Well, as I just said, I've just got back from, I literally have just walked through the door from go-karting with my son. And you know, that thing that they say that the only, man who should be proud of you when you beat him is your dad. Mm. I'm being soundly beaten by my son.
Really?
Soundly beaten by him.
Oh, cool.
and I'm there, but and it's probably a good metaphor for life, because I'm there behind him and I'm just going, I'm good at this. I was on Top Gear. I'm good at this driving thing. And he's just, every corner, he just inches away into the distance. And then they tried to make me feel better, which is a good metaphor for life, but they tried to make me feel better by saying, well, it's a weight to go-kart ratio. And I'm like, doesn't matter. I've got much more experience. And he went, yeah, no, he's better than you are. So forgive the sort of helmet, weird hair that's been in a go-karting helmet all day. Wow. But should we sum up the year first, or should we talk about stuff that pisses us off first? We love first? What do you
Let's talk about the week first. First and foremost, Queen Bob stood in for me last week. That was interesting.
It was like a history lesson, wasn't it? She was amazing. Oh, yeah. Your man flu. My dad's got the man flu.
I mean, it's really minor, isn't it? Honestly, I would have soldiered through it, but my voice was gone. So I can't really do anything. And all of my shows are within 24 hours of each other. So I had The Common Sense Crusade, Fox and Father, Dan Wharton Outspoken. Couldn't do any of them. So I was disappointed, really. But we're back. It's all good.
You're all back. I really loved speaking to Bob because I started off really wrong. I was like, what do you think about UNRWA? And, you know, she's like, oh, I don't really care about that. I'm more interested in Cornwall. And
I am.
How absolutely screwed Cornwall is, and it's disgusting. And Lucas Trisgithick, or you know, and she talked to you. It was like a history lesson. It was the best. It was the best thing ever. And I thought we could call it. Because you think when you read her tweets, and I think this is interesting about all people's tweets. Actually, when you read someone's tweets, you think you're getting an insight into them, but you're not. You're getting an insight into the format of X, as it's called, which is some people are very no nonsense. I try and push it as far as I can go, as you know, and you've brought me to heel on that. But she's also very hard on social media. She's like, F you this, F you that, blah, blah, blah. You know? But as a person, she's just golden, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely.
So she is a, she's obviously a Fox and Father follows for this week. Thanks, Pete, for that. And so yeah, that was nice. And we were away. We went away for the week.
Yes. How was your holiday?
It was really good.
I thought you'd be browner. You looked the same. I saw your tweets, you were looking like bright red. So I thought he's going to come back brown.
You know what's happened?
No.
Lizzie's given me one of her magic potions.
Okay.
So she's like, if you put this on you, it'll take away the burn. And right. It did take away the burn, but it also seems to have slightly bleached me.
Okay.
So no, it's called Egyptian Magic Cream. Can highly recommend. Would you like to become a sponsor? Thank you. And so yeah, we went, and it was quite funny actually. On the day one, I went, you know, you're sat down, you're chilling in front of the most beautiful ocean, and the reef is out there. And I wandered over and tried to rent a windsurfer because I thought I've got to do some exercise and stuff, and they didn't. It was a different hotel, and they didn't rent them out. So I then went back to the bar and I said, can I get a beer, please? And they gave me a beer. And then later in the day, I went back and I said, can I get another beer, please? And he went, you want beer or magic beer? And I was like, well, I obviously want a magic beer. So a magic beer, thanks to the Mauritian people. Also, bear in mind that the whole Chagos situation changed while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
The Mauritian beer is a magic beer. Is a Phoenix beer with a single shot of rum in it.
Okay. Rum and beer.
Actually tastes very, very good. It might be unique to that beer. I haven't tried it in the UK yet, but I might give it a go.
I do like a bit of rum.
Oh, it's lovely.
It's in my blood.
Mm. So yeah, we had a lovely, relaxing good. Time. Didn't do much. And now are back and dealing with there's been a chicken genocide, which has been...
Yeah. So who killed all the chickens?
Okay. The reason. Because I bought when I got all excited about my DIY stuff?
Yeah. And you killed one of your eyes and all kinds of, yeah.
Yeah. So I was building a 5 meter long chicken and 3 meter wide chicken enclosure to stop the dogs and the chickens having disagreements. And what happened was, I got up to about sort of just above waist height with the chicken wire.
Cool.
And then Storm, whatever, Brenda or whatever it was, came in. And I couldn't finish it off because I just couldn't, and my eye was scratched. So the chickens, but bless them, they do fly, chickens. So the chicken, one of the chickens flies out while I'm away and flies down into the garden and is met by 8 dogs. God rest her soul.
Okay. Did they have a nice meal?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, I couldn't watch the video. I couldn't watch the video that was sent to me. Anyway, then the other 2 chickens did exactly the same thing and flew down. But instead of flying down into the dogs, they flew down into the bush where the dogs can't get into because it's very thick. And they stayed there. And they came back at night. And, one of them came back at night. Anyway, so I worked out that bantams are better than giant chickens. Mm-hmm. So I've replaced the bantams, and I spent all yesterday doing the rest of the chicken wire and putting everything on. So now no one can escape and everything's fine.
Okay.
But yeah, it's been a pretty... the chicken genocide. It's like a trans genocide. It's really, really... Oh, Calvin. I said, come on.
Can we show footage of the dogs having their chicken dinner?
I don't think people want to see that.
Have you got it?
Lizzie does on her phone. I can't deal with it.
Okay.
One of our chums was looking after the house, and she her voice on it. She's like, I can't deal with it. I don't know what to do. It's too much for that. Anyway, look, we're far too much on us. Let's get on to the important issues of the week. Would you like to start? Lob up a topic. I know where you're going to go with this.
Okay. So let's talk about our old company, Gubbana. GB News has had a rehash or a refresh and fired half of their talent. And I used that word in inverted commas. Mark Dolan is gone. Mark Dolan has been fired. which is interesting because Mark Dolan, I always liked him when I worked there, by the way. But at the moment we all got fired, he pretty much just threw us under the bus and tried to jump in Dan Wotton's grave. Clearly wanted his job and got it. But of course, if you feed the crocodile, you'll eventually get bitten yourself. And it seems that that's what's happened. I think he's going to release, he said he's going to release a video, but we don't, I don't really know the ins and outs of what's gone on there yet. But he's gone. Isabel Webster's gone. Again, I always liked Isabel Webster. As far as the liberals go, she was a nice one. Andrew Doyle's gone. He's coming over to America with Graham Linehan, and they're going to create some sitcoms, apparently. But pretty much everyone's gone. Lacey was just telling me that Jacob Rees-Mogg's gone down. He's losing a couple of his shows, and Matthew Goodwin is stepping in. And so who are they getting in to replace all these people that they've just fired? Well, they've got Miriam Cates doing stuff. So, okay, conservative politician. Robert Jenrick has just released a GB News video. Okay, another conservative politician. So it's kind of, it is the house of rejected conservatives, really.
Yeah, it's Tory TV, but not quite. It's very strange. I have to say on a personal level, much as I don't like to go, ha 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 ha. Sorry. Much as I don't like to do that, I will reserve that for Mark Dolan, that cowardly little clonker. A man who I was nothing but sweet to, nothing but nice to, as you were. And the way, I don't mind being thrown under the bus personally, because, on a few levels, I deserve it. But when he throws under the bus, you didn't, what did you do? You were loyal.
I remember.
You were loyal, Calf. It shows to me, I mean, he's getting hoofed because no one wants to watch Mark Dolan.
Right.
I don't think. But then I was speaking to a few high-end journos today, and they were like, oh, I love Mark Dolan. He's fabulous. Why do you think, why were you slightly gleeful? And I said, do you pay any attention to what these people do? And they don't, in a way. So, goodbye and good riddance. The old Reagan line of never criticizing another conservative because we're pretty thin on the ground has come home true for Mark Dolan, who will no doubt be starting the Mark Dolan Uncensored.
No, I doubt it. I don't think he has an audience in the same way that Dan Walton had an audience or you and I have an audience. I think he kind of just filled a void over at GB News, but I don't think he's got his own community. I can't see him doing his own show.
Yeah. I mean, what's his background? Was he a comedian? And also, I do feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for when anyone loses a job. But you know what? I wouldn't release a monologue going, yes, like he's got someone in his ear going, and now you put the knife into your fellow. It's like, I mean, you can criticize me for many, many things, but being a horrible, disloyal, nasty piece of work on the make is not one of them.
No.
So I'm happy to be a little bit gleeful that Mark Dolan is going to be working out what it's like to be cancelled himself now. Mm. Having cancelled us. So God bless him. I don't know what happens. GB News, I think their viewing figures are pretty good. I think they do better than Sky and better than BBC. But at the end of the day, again, it's not Fox News, is it? It's not, it doesn't have the slickness. It doesn't have the plurality of views. Fox is obviously, it does lean right quite substantially, but it does, you know, Brett Baer is a very, very highly professional person. The only reason GB News exists really is for Nigel Farage in many ways, I imagine. And I don't know what they're trying to be. What are they trying to be?
Well, I think they're annoying their audience. Every decision they make seems to go against their core or who they claim their core is. So I don't really know what they're trying to be, unfortunately. It's a very weird thing that they're doing right now. But I don't think their viewer figures are particularly good. I think every now and then they have a show that beats Sky and BBC. But generally speaking, I think the audience is quite small and getting smaller. And that's not just GB News, that's TV in general. But GB News is at the lower end. No one's watching.
So, and then it takes on to the broader conversation about what is the point of like reform TV I kind of get the idea of it.
Well,
but then,
the point would be great if they were pushing back on all these horrible things that the government's doing and they're really like giving a voice to the silent majority and being champions for free speech and all the things that we all thought it was setting out to be. But if it's just another arm of the establishment, then it's pointless. And this is why it's so frustrating. Like, it's not because we all worked there or whatever. It's because, like, we all want a voice. We all want champions in the media, but there are none.
It becomes increasingly rare. I mean, but having said that, when I look across the pond, and I was listening yesterday and the day before, I pretty much switched off, other than Alison Pearson and Liam Halligan's Planet Normal and the Brendan O'Neill show I listened to on Spike. I barely listen to an English commentator on anything because I just don't care. And I listen to the Americans and the optimism that is flowing out of Americans. You've got Democrats going, you know, people are optimistic again, they're hopeful again, and it's so wonderful. So, you know, I'm getting my hit there. I don't really get the point, GB News. I see that, what's the guy that was going to start a political party called? Matt Goodwin. So he's doing a show.
He's heavily involved in reform.
Is he?
Yeah,
I thought he was going to start his own political party.
Was he? I didn't know about that. But I know he's been behind the scenes at Reform, helping them out with a lot of stuff.
Right, right. And
he's pretty angry, but
we've definitely done Elon's 100 million, haven't we? Have we done that?
Well, I don't think we did. And your friend Nick Candy is supporting Reform as well.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, I at the end of the day, I'm sort of like, anything but the Uniparty. But my fear is, I do share Ben Habib's fear that there is no constitutional, there's no membership. And I can see why they don't do it. I can see why someone like Nigel wants to be able to move quickly and doesn't want a membership to be accountable to. I get it. But that means that you're not really a political party. You're a dictatorship.
No. It's the Nigel fraud project. It always has been. I still won't support it. I mean, I think it's interesting that Mick and Elon are potentially backing it and throwing some money at it because it will shake things up and it will disrupt the UK political scene, which needs to happen. But I still can't support Nigel Farage or his Mohammedan chairman, and the party itself is just seemingly the Tory party from 5 years ago. So I don't see the point in it, really. But it's great to see some movement in UK politics. And Elon Musk is taking an interest because they're trying to persecute him and they're very anti-free speech. So
yeah, I was listening to Megyn Kelly yesterday and she was talking about that she says she's about as close to a free speech absolutist as and First Amendment absolutist as you can get. And it's so interesting that she, you know, she was so supportive of us when we got done over, because she was just like, what did you do wrong? And then you notice that in America things are different, and I hate to say it, but I think the dilution of our culture, the absolute dilution of our culture, by the way, where you're letting off Mohammedans who run people over and kill them because, you know, they're Mohammedans and we've got to be very nice to Mohammedans, even if they kill people or rape children, got to let them off. But we persecute our own people. I almost think that the era of Britain is kind of done. I don't see a way back. And if Nigel Farage is the way back, with the greatest respect, no thanks.
Well, it would just be more of the same, really, really and truly. He might be a little tad bit more right-wing than the current Conservative Party, but he's not a Conservative and he's not a Christian, well, as far as I know. So...
Oh, yeah, okay. So, Kemi, Christian.
Yeah. Kemi says she no longer believes in God, and lots of people turned around and said, I no longer believe in Kemi. That was interesting, wasn't it?
I always loved that thing when I was a kid and I was like, I don't believe in God. And my parents would sort of patiently say, well, God believes in you.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a strange thing to say for her, really. I mean, I thought, you will know this better, but I would imagine you could say, my faith is a private matter. Or you could play the Jordan Peterson card, which is like, I live as if there is a God. Or you could play the Cam Robinson card and go, there is God, and the Lawrence Fox card and go, there is a God, and that's what we believe in, and that's where everything that our whole life stems from.
Right.
But she had a way out of that. And also to say she no longer believed in God. I'm like, wow, what happened?
Mm.
You joined the Conservative Party? Right. What happened?
But if people don't believe in God, what do they believe in other than themselves? And if you want to lead a party that could potentially put you into government and you could potentially be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, what set of ideas are you going to be running on? It's no good to say I'm a cultural Christian. What does that mean? Like, unless you're centering your life on a set of ideas that people can subscribe to, who are you and what are you for? Like, what are you fighting for? Like, it's all well and good being anti-woke, but again, we always say, what are you pro? Unless you're pro-Christ, then who are you pro? I think Kemi's going to have a tough, I mean, I'm not coming out as anti or pro Kemi, but I'm just saying I think she's going to have a tough time now that she's come out and said that she doesn't have a foundation to her beliefs. She doesn't have a core set of principles that she's running on.
The thing is, I'm not sure she's being, I don't think it was a good idea for her to even enter the territory if she was going to go there. But it's like, what you want out of all of this chaos of cowardice and leftist, you know, Vic Saves Hansen was saying this, saying, you know, we are dealing with a full-on Maoist, communist, Jacobin cultural movement, which is trying to attack us and destroy it. And the only way you react to that is by disrupting in return in a huge way. You have to delegitimize everything that they do from every single level, which is, I think, you know, both of our crimes, actually, if I'm honest. I think it's you and I are both guilty of doing that on a and, you know, innocent of doing it on a relentless basis. So I'm more interested in what people want to live for and want to die for than I am in whether someone wants to be seen as a sort of culturally, you know, because we don't have it, as far as I can tell, we don't have a culture.
I mean, the United Kingdom, it should be a requirement to be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom that you're either English, Irish, Scottish, or Welsh, and you are a Christian. It used to be a legal requirement that you were a member of the Church of England, that you were an Anglican up until very recently. And this should be expected of someone who's going to run a Christian country. And people say, oh, well, it's not a Christian country, but you can say what you like and think what you like, but it still is a Christian country. And there still is an established church that has its hand in the state. We have our state and church are tied together. We have a form of integralism, really, that is very different to the rest of the Western world. Especially America. Excuse me.
What have you done? What's your camera done?
Kicks my camera.
I'm gonna cut my camera and go, ah.
But yeah, the leader of the United Kingdom should be a Christian. That's quite simple.
I think that's absolutely 100% should be instantiated in law.
Yeah.
That you have to be a Christian, because, you know, you look at some of these ministers, and the other thing, sorry to moan, and I know I'm moaning because I'm tired and I'm annoyed, but I just look at the I was watching Pierre Poilievre's speech, and one of these GB News people commented and said, well, there's no substance to his speech at all. It may be inspiring, but there's no substance to it. And I'm like, he's laying out, literally in his speech, he's laying out the principles of what proper public services, and you look at these people who represent us, and I'm like, where did you come from?
Yeah,
I wouldn't give you a job in any business at all. I mean, people could say that about me, and that's fine, but at least I'm smart-ish, and at least I've got some instincts, and I know the difference between right and wrong.
These people, you know, what you believe in as well. And the rest of these politicians, they don't actually. They don't share what they may have a set of beliefs, but we don't hear it because they're all so vapid, because they want to appease everyone. They want to be liked by everyone, and you can't do that and be truthful. And so, I mean, people, your beliefs on your cards, your cards on the table. People know what you believe. They know who you are. They know what you stand for. That's a good thing. Most of our both Labour and Conservative politicians are empty vessels. So when they see someone like that, what's the chap name, the Canadian?
Trudeau or Poilievre. He's about to come in.
So when they see him speaking on a platform, they don't recognize it. They can't see the content. There is content there. There was lots of content there. I thought it was inspiring too, but they can't see it because they're used to seeing these empty shells of just nice smiles and handshakes.
It's amazing that Trump has destroyed Trudeau's premiership in 25 minutes.
The governor.
Just by doing that and by turning around and saying, we're going to tariff the hell out of you and we're going to bankrupt you as a country. That sort of behavior, that disruptive behavior to me is very, very, I kind of want to use the word alluring, but it's not the right word because that has a sexual connotation. But it's like, that's what we need. We need someone to grab this country. And I want Kemi to be that person in a lot of ways, because I really admire what Farage has been through. I admire resilience and against persecution. And I think that his instincts are sound, and I think he's extremely canny. But, you know, do I want the benign dictatorship or less benign dictatorship of Nigel Farage? Or do I want an accountable political alternative? And I want them to cancel each other?
People keep saying, stop dividing the right and this and that, just back Farage is all we have. Like, if people want to back Farage, good for that. I can't do it. I will not vote for a leader of my country that is not Christian, that is out for themselves, is a careerist ambitionist, that throws people under the bus, is disloyal and is vapid and after just money and fame and fortune and establishment career. I can't do it. I love my country too much.
I think that you're touching on something really important, which is, how deep do the feelings that you have inside of you, how because feelings must create convictions, and convictions must create practical. Okay, so a feeling is a sort of an amorphous thing, an emotional response to something, and then a conviction is like, well, I actually, you know, no, I do, I believe in England, my home, the things that, you know, the things that England has offered the world. I love that. And then it turns into a principle, which is like, I will defend this principle. And then it turns into a policy. And at that juncture, it all goes to shit. So I, you know, Kemi could easily come out and outflank everyone while Farage is rolling his tanks onto the field. And she could come out and outflank them. And I just go, why are you not doing it? Why are you not turning around and saying, we're going to totally disband the College of Policing? So instead of going, I'm pro free speech, I know you want to be that, you know, you're talking about what people are pro, but she goes, I want to apologize for the absolutely ruinous policies of the last 14 years of Conservative government, because, but our uncontrolled immigration policy was not an ideological one like it is with Labour. Communists want to just destroy cultures and societies and families and everything, but she could just say, look, I'm really sorry. We, the Conservatives, of which I'm in charge now, we destroyed this country because we thought it would make us richer. Whereas Labour are destroying this country because they hate the country. So why she could so easily pivot and say, it was wrong, I am sorry. And it's a very Conservative principle, conviction, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. It's like, where is this idea of her turning around and saying, okay, we fucked up badly. I'm really, really sorry. So this is what I'm going to do to deal with it. I'm going to get rid of every single unelected quango and commissar and bureaucracy in Britain. That's what I will do for you. And she would then, people would start going, oh, we got a Conservative again. But there's a caution there. And I think that caution comes from this mixture of turning a private conviction into a public policy. Do you think that people should always come from their gut, or do you think that people should think carefully about things like policies, or do you just go at it like Trump and just go, no, we're going to tariff you to the end of the world, and we're going to shut that down. That's finished, and we can all be a bit happier. What do you think about it?
I like Trump's approach. I like people who lead from the gut, but I like people who, if someone's leading from the gut, you've got to know who they are and what they believe. With the current Conservatives, I don't know who they are or what they believe. So if they were to lead with their gut, that would worry me, because I'm like, what are they doing this for? Why are they doing this? I don't see anyone in that party that wants to reshape Britain into what it could be and what it has been. I don't think they want to disrupt. I think a lot of them want to get into positions of power. They want the job. They want the prestige. Very much similar to Reform. The Conservatives aren't setting out to say, even the ones that say we've got to control the borders, we've got to cut or cap immigration, all this kind of, like, they're not doing it for an ideological purpose or for a belief purpose. They're doing it because they know that that's what the voters want. The ones that are finally coming around to that, they know it's what the voters want. But do they want it? And why? That's the issue. And when I see, you know, the current leader of the Conservative Party going out to the WEF and taking photos with all the leaders out there and smiling and loving it and being a part of that, just as Keir Starmer is. I'm like, they're all part of the same blumming club. That's what they're more interested in than fixing the country. I don't want a Conservative Party leader that's going to go straight out to Davos. I want a Conservative Party leader that's going to say, Davos is a big part of the problem. Globalization is an issue that has led us to where we are, just as liberalism is an issue and wokeism and Mohammedanism. We need to challenge all these things. I don't need to be a part of these things. I need to come up against them. And it's going to be hard. And I'm going to take a lot of flack for it, but I'm going to do it because it's right. That's what I want to see. And we don't have that.
No, we don't. We really don't. Except, and they do in America, because this guy, Tom Homan, they said, I loved his interview with CNN. They were like, you say that the mass deportations are going to start on day one, but you know, when are they actually going to start? And he's like, day one. And it was brilliant. And you just went, day one. And then she tried to dig, and a lot of people have tried to dig with this dude, and he is hard as they come.
Oh, yeah.
He's an old upstate. He comes from a family of law enforcement people from upstate New York. And he turned around, he's got a list already of convicted criminals, multiple convicted criminals, of 1.5 million already. So Biden let
Why are they
50.
Here? Why
exactly.
are they here?
But they're going to start deporting them. And we're still getting, this is what I don't understand about reform. Rupert Lowe is making a huge amount of sense when it comes to all of this sort of stuff, but it's not echoed by the, this is why I mean what I mean about having a party with an actual constitution and a set of policies. Because how can one MP be saying one thing and the leader says something totally different?
Mm.
It's like, if you asked me to vote for the Rupert Lowe party, I still wouldn't do that either, because I want to vote for a political party that can actually take power and actually do something useful, like cull the dreadful bureaucracy that's drowning our country. But Homan's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's literally going to, on day one, the minute the keys are handed over and it's like, you're in charge now, these people are going to be, they're going to have knocks on their doors and they're out. Gone. Bye. See you later.
Mm.
And I don't understand, and it really confuses me, how we've got to this stage in society, in progressive modern Western liberal democracies, where we all think that we're so wonderful and clever that, you know, we can tolerate the third gender, or we can tolerate all of this madness. It's like, no, get rid of it. There are Sharia courts in the United Kingdom. Mm. Get rid of them. They've been there for years. But ban, deport, remove, get rid of it. It's a logical solution to a problem rather than anything else. And that's what I mean by the weakness of our current political class, because none of these fuckers will stand up and do anything.
No, they're weak and feeble. To say there are estimated 85 Sharia courts in the UK, more than anywhere else in the West. And actually, we're sending it out from Britain to the rest of Europe and the rest of the West. This is where jihadis are coming from and where the Sharia court system is coming from. We are breeding it at home. And what are we doing about it? Well, actually, we have to address the cultural issues of diversity, inclusion, equality. No, stamp it out. It's already legal. We have a legal system. We should have equality under the law for everyone. And if you have set up your own legal system, especially if it's Sharia, you should be out, gone. And anyone else that's with you, like Tim Homan says, we don't want to just deport you. We want to deport your whole family. You're gone, done. No longer welcome. We've got to be harsh. We've got to draw a line. Otherwise, they will take over, and they are taking over. Like they don't need to take over Parliament. Like we are fighting a different fight to them. We're like, we need to get Parliament back so we can get our systems back and get a Conservative in there and change this. They don't even play by those rules. They're like, we're setting up our own courts. We've got our own legal system. We don't really care who you've got in number 10. Yeah, we've got some of our own people in Parliament now, and they'll stand up and defend first cousin marriage. But it's unimportant to us, because we have forced marriage of first cousins. And if you go along with it, we kill you. And if you don't like it, go to our courts. Like, they've set up their own parallel system in our country, and they're getting away with it. It's baffling that we're allowing that.
It is baffling. And the idea that in English Sharia courts, you can go divorce three times, and that works. But I, again, will push everybody in the direction of Elaine Ellinger let's have a look what she is on X. I would push everyone to look. She writes something called Perspectives on Islam. From a non-Muslim. My computer's doing some strange things. Anyway, I think it's Elaine_Ellinger with two L's, Elaine.
You put out a tweet the other day saying follow her, didn't you?
Just follow her and look at what she says about what's being done. And then you see the guy walking in to Wetherspoons and going, you got a halal breakfast, mate?
It's like, no,
I don't have a fucking halal breakfast, thanks very much.
You do an English breakfast. Do you have a Desi breakfast? What's a Desi? No, this is Wetherspoons, an English bar in England. Like, if you want to get English food, you go to an English bar in England. If you want to get Desi food, go to a Desi bar in Desi, wherever that is. Who cares? You do orange. It's not spicy enough, but it's orange juice. What are you looking for? He's clearly making a point. And this is what they're doing. They're trying to say it's not theirs yet, but they want to take it over. Well, I don't think they're going to take over Wetherspoons. Tim Martin wouldn't be having that. But in general, they want to take over the high street and get it, all their stuff, their culture everywhere. Well, why have you come to Britain?
To take over, to invade, to take over and to mark. And if you think about that thing, you can get the most expensive hotel in Morocco, which is La Mamounia. And I've been there. And Churchill stayed there. And you cannot, when I was trying to work out where we'd go on holiday, I thought, we could do La Mamounia for a week. And then the thing about La Mamounia is, flights to Morocco aren't that expensive and, you know, all that. And you can get a relatively affordable room. But what you can't do is get any like all included or even breakfast included.
Mm.
But when you do have breakfast, it's chicken sausage or turkey bacon.
Right.
And if you turned around and said to the people there, I want some Danish back bacon or some English back bacon, some unsmoked back bacon, where is it? You'd be kicked out of the hotel.
Yeah, that's
a hotel, not a country. That's a hotel. Where is it? Where does this pathetic appeasement come from in this country?
And I've always had that problem with us as well. When Englishmen go abroad and say, I want sausage, egg and chips. And all I'm eating is sausage, egg and chips. Like, if you go to a foreign country, they may not do sausage, egg and chips. Like, go into that country, you've got to prepare to eat the food that they eat in that country. That's to be expected. But it should be the same back home. We don't. We bend over backwards. Everywhere is selling halal meat, this, that, the other. No, I want proper English back bacon. I want some Cumberland sausages or some Lincolnshire sausages. And I can't get them in America. But I'm like, what I'm going to do is, as Americans, I want some Lincolnshire sausage. Like, there is no Lincolnshire in America. So I can't expect to get that. They have Link's sausages here. It's like, you've got to adapt to the culture of the place that you're in.
Mm. Well, also, it was quite interesting when we were driving back from go-karting today and we were going past people's houses and all the Christmas stuff. My little one said, people are so much more English here. And I was like, Santa's not even an English thing. So culture's bad. I didn't say that to him. I just thought, you're right. It's very, very much people care about saying, this is a season where we do this.
Mm.
It's not, it doesn't have any of these horrible permutations. And actually what she does say, Elaine, a lot, is that the halal is a very, very good access point because we end up paying for it. And I think that that Britain should know that. And I'm 100% with you. Before we got to change subject because we could rant about the Mohammedans all day.
Yeah, make halal illegal.
Make halal illegal. Ban it. I don't want it. And also at the same time, kosher. So I'm happy to do on both hands.
Yeah, make that kosher illegal too.
I'm like, it's not part of our culture. Sorry. And if you want to do kosher, go do it privately in your own little thing, but do not stick it in our school meals and do not stick halal in my school meals for my children without telling anybody. I don't want it. Do not do meat-free Monday because you think the fucking planet is about to explode. I don't want you to indoctrinate my children. I want you to read T.S. Eliot poems to them so they understand scansion and they understand how language is used.
Well,
that's what I got. I was educated on that. You see, I mourn this so much. I hated public school and I was very, very blessed and lucky to go there. I hated it. I hated boarding school. I hated the way people were treated each other. But my dad said something interesting to me the other day as well, which was like, your generation, none of your generation have done national service. They don't understand what it's like to actually understand how a system operates.
Mm.
Even a platoon of men. The lieutenant, who's usually a bit of a wet with no experience, and the sergeant, who's a non-commissioned guy, who's a salt the earth man, who comes through and he teaches the lieutenant how to lead. And he said, you don't even have that system in your generation anymore. So you guys don't know what you're doing. And I couldn't agree with him more. Anyway, we must change the subject to porn stars. Because I think on this one, we'll just be really, really liberal and happy, won't we? I mean, I can sense we're going to be pretty chilled about this. So for anyone who doesn't know, who hasn't turned on the internet recently, what's her name? Lily Phillips. So she, an OnlyFans creator. Interestingly, Lizzie said something to me the other day that OnlyFans was not created for this. It was initially created, and I could be absolutely wrong here, by the way, and I'll just blame Lizzie if I am. But I think OnlyFans was sort of an idea created a little bit like Cameo, which was a way of engaging with people. It wasn't designed as how many disgusting things you can see on the screen thing. Anyway, so she has had sex with 100 men. And then gone, and someone's making a documentary about it, which makes me feel a bit eesh about that. And she's gone, oh, it's really hard to do. What are your feelings about Lily Phillips?
Yeah, she's preparing. She's ramping up. So she's doing 300 men next. She's trying to get to 1,000 men in what, 24 hours, is it?
Hang on, how do you do that? Sorry, this seems to divide 1,000. How many... I'm going to do some math. You talk while I do the math.
It's about 1 minute, 30 seconds each or something.
Have you done the maths? You've done the maths already. Of course you have.
Work it out. Let me know if that's right. I just think it's disgusting. I think it's absolutely disgusting. Are people saying she's being exploited? You know, this, something. She's not being exploited. Or maybe she is to some degree, but she is selling herself. She is prostituting herself. She's no longer a porno. I want to say porn star because they're not stars, but she's no longer a porno girl. She's now a prostitute. I suppose on OnlyFans, you are a prostitute anyway, because you're selling your body. And it's a shame on everyone. So it's not that she's at fault and the men aren't, or the men are at fault and she isn't. The men are at fault too. 100 men or 300 men or 1,000 men lining up to have sex with the same woman is absolutely disgusting. Heaven knows what they're going to catch. But sex is supposed to be an intimate act between two people who love each other, who are married, a one man and one woman in an indissoluble lifelong union for the purposes of being blessed by God with children. It's an act of procreation. And we've separated that out, divorced it from God, divorced it from marriage. It's just about personal desire, lust, and sin. It is the sin of fornication, but she's promoting that sin on a massive level. And saying, oh, it's hard. Well, of course it's going to be hard. It's because the human body isn't designed for that amount of intimacy in such a short span of time with that many different people. We're created to form permanent lifelong bonds with one person. And so she's breaking all that apart, but she doesn't see it. And that to hear that her mother is her pimp is just gross. And I think Candace Owens was absolutely spot on with this. This is another thing that I disagree with Hannah Pearl Davis on. That Candace Owens was 100% that her mother should be saying, love, don't do this. You're worth more than this. You've got more dignity and worth. You know, I love you. Don't do this. Don't sell yourself and degrade yourself. Think about your future, whatever job you may have in the future, or what your children may think. Because they will know about this and their friends will know about this. Like, for a mother to say, oh, I'll help you with your finances then, is just debauched. It's kind of Britney Spears-esque kind of stuff, isn't it? These horrible parents that leech off of the sexualization of their own children. They should be in hell.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose I could throw back a couple of very strawy man arguments about the fact that, you know, we do live in a sort of more sexually transactional society, and that whether you like it or not, that is the development of society. I've certainly been involved in that. I hold my hand up to it. Not that I'm some sort of rampant philanderer, but, you know, in any committed relationship I've been in, I've been extremely monogamous. But I having been someone who has played the field a bit, I've never ever enjoyed it in a meaningful way. And the point that you raise about the fact that this is on record forever. And I think what we saw, so to try and give her a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, which I'm not going to give her because she's, as you
well,
say,
you can do, because, well, to be fair, I felt bad for her. She's broken.
She's a human being. So it's, it's a minute and a half without sleep for 24 hours.
Like, she's physically, emotionally, spiritually broken from this. And she's going to continue. Why? I suppose money, fame, all the horrible things that people make idols of. But I really do feel bad for her, because when you saw her and people were like, oh, look, she's clearly crying. And how do you cry with no tears? I'm sorry, but that wasn't crying. Her eyes were sore for another reason. And that's gross in and of itself. But yeah, you could clearly see her spirit was broken back by this. So why is she going on with it?
It's just, I cannot, other than to say that it's satanic. Like, you know that India, have you ever seen that Indiana Jones film, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? When they go to the banquet at the beginning of the Kalima Shakti Day, you know, the banquet, and this guy, they're like just gorging themselves, and the Romans were famous for doing it, and they cut open a snake, and this guy's just like taking out snakes and like gorging on them, and you just think, this is where the devil is. The whole thing is so satanic. Mm-hmm. And you see the men with their little hoods, that you see them on Twitter. I mean, that I actually posted it, because I was like, hang on a minute, this is on Twitter, my kids can get on that with no parental controls whatsoever. My kids can see what she's up to. And she's forming an alliance with someone else called Molly or Bolly or Bonnie or something like that. But there is a weakness in men in terms of the fact that men seek multiple partners. So I get that. But it seems like they shouldn't. And that's why the institution of marriage was so clearly defined, because it does men a huge favor and women a huge favor at the same time. And only good will come from that.
Yeah, women have been the gatekeepers of sex historically. And this is why men have been encouraged to get married, so that they can enter that sexual relationship. And then that's how families come about. And it's all worked out naturally. That's how we've procreated as a species. But now women are told to act like men and be promiscuous and to seek sex as a personal desire, a lustful, sinful act outside of any intimate relationship or marriage or outside of anything. And so now they're no longer gatekeeping sex. They are talking about body counts and stuff themselves. And so it's just debauchery rampant.
But it's not even a turn. It's not even a turn on. But if it turned me on and I was like, "Whoa, yeah, I wouldn't mind being one of those guys," I'm just like, "Whoa, oh, like, hello, mate. Sorry, what number are you? 48. Oh, I'm 73. So I'll probably have to have a go and have a cup of tea, shall I?" It's like, ugh. And it is the, I think sex is being used quite cleverly now. So, you know, for many years, they've said that porn is, you know, the only thing that's searched up on the internet. But men are being used quite cleverly. Their lust is being used quite cleverly to empower. This is all dressed up by the sort of non-disgusted people as like female empowerment, and it's there's nothing empowering about it at all, because as you say, one day she's probably going to go, you know what, I just want to have a kid and be a mum, and you know, I've got my 18 million quid now, and what am I going to do with it? You know, what, do 2,000 guys in a week? I mean, it's not gonna. And also, you looks fade, you know. One of the lawyers I worked with for a long time said to me, she was complaining about being menopausal. And she said one of the hugest tragedies in her life, and she was a same-sex attracted person. She said one of the hugest horriblenesses in her life was when she became invisible. And she said, you notice it, you just become invisible as a woman. Men's eyes just turn somewhere else. Yeah. And that will happen to every woman and every man. And it just seems so crazy for this to be done. And in a way, I mean, obviously I don't really believe in censorship, but I'm a bit like, why is it on Twitter?
Mm.
Why is it on Twitter? Why? Yeah.
You're right. None of it's empowering. It is exploitative. And there's no encouragement there for any man to settle down with this woman at all. She is used and abused, and it's quite disgusting now. So how is she going to find a good partner, a good husband, to start a family with, if that's even a consideration of hers? It may not be now, but at some point in the future, it probably will be. So she's ruining her life. She's ruining her children's lives. And she's kind of divorcing the idea of finding a husband, which is very sad.
Because I thought, I used to get really upset when people used to mock me at school by going, oh yeah, you're the one whose dad was like a really cool movie star who's now a weird monk. How's your weird Christian monk dad? And that used to like hurt me. So imagine by saying, oh, you're the one whose mum shagged 1,000 blokes in a day. Oof, nice. Now, your before we get
yeah.
a skirt,
is, yeah.
I'm this cabin. You're using some.
I'm done with
British, the- I'm done with the kids. So now that we've filled the world with joy, with our joyfulness, what are our thoughts on the year? Let's start with things that we feel grateful for. Does that work with you? Do you like grateful, or does that sound a bit like alcoholic sandwich?
No, it's not good.
Okay. What are you grateful for this year, Calvin Robinson, father?
I knew you said Boris Johnson because I'm thinking about your hair. Donald Trump winning the US presidency. And things are all, I mean, he's not even in power yet. Things are already changing, not just here, but around the world. Politics is shifting in the UK because of it, in Canada because of it, even in France. So the mood, the vibe of the West is changing. It was becoming very, very dark. And now it's looking like there's a little bit of a light shining on the West again. So there's a chance to save Christendom. It feels like good. It feels like we've got a bit of encouragement going on. We prayed a lot. We've been rewarded because of that prayer. So we've got to keep up the prayer.
I agree. And on a personal level, what about you? And it's been a big year for you. So how do you feel?
Oh, yeah. I've got like contentness or contentment. I'm loving being out here. I've got my parish. We're working on things as a parish community. Just getting settled into US life and kind of leaving the darkness of London behind has been nice.
And so you've got the optimism of the dawn.
Mm.
You've got you're settling in now. You've left, you know, I say it frequently, but you know, I only had about three friends and now you left. So what are your hopes for the coming year? Are you settled? Are you happy where you are now?
Much happier. Hopes for I don't really know about, I don't try not to think too much about the future, but next year it'd be good to see a shift away from the Conservatives and Labour in the UK. It'd be good to see the United Kingdom movement get back out. It'd be good to see Tommy get out of prison, and you know, who knows? Maybe he could become an MP for UKIP or something like that. Who knows what's in store? On a personal level, I want to get a dog. So, and I want to get my
Snickers. We're going to breed Snickers.
Okay.
Snickers is so beautiful.
I want a big dog though.
Oh yeah, you want a Doberman, don't you?
Not necessarily a Doberman. I'd like a Doberman, but it's probably not the best for a parish priest. So I'll probably get like a black lab or something.
I think a Doberman would be pretty cool for a parish priest.
I definitely want to get a dog, and I've got to get a gun, and I've got a car, but I need to get my driving sorted out. So basically next year is just going to be getting like that kind of stuff settled.
Well, if there's anyone rich who watches Fox and Father who wants to get Calvin like a proper lovely car that he can go around in, and also
got an American truck.
A big American truck who can also put him in touch with a Doberman breeder. Ooh. That would be great, because he needs his stuff. You know, he looks like he's living the flash life, flying from here, flying to there, but he drives a Subaru. So
I have a very humble life, believe it or not. I own very few things, but
despite what the Daily Mail or any newspaper want to say to you, I know that Calvin is... we're not in love. I'm not trying to marry him for his money. Put it that way.
Tell me about you. What are you excited about and what are you happy about?
Okay, so reflections on the year. Things that I reflect on have been teaching myself, living with somebody who you trust. Very, very interesting. You really trust, you know, and there's either a Tolstoy line or a Dostoevsky line. I think it's Tolstoy. He said it's better to trust than to love. Something along those lines. And to go through the big transitions of moving away from London. When we landed the other day, I said to Lizzie, I just drive into London up from Gatwick into London to pick up children. And I was just like, can you imagine if we were going back to Stockwell now?
Mm.
And she was like, oh yeah. So there's been the adjustment to here, which has had its huge ups and it's very small downs. The small downs are, I am someone who quite likes going to the Wolseley for lunch.
Well,
and I am someone who quite likes going to a crowded London pub. I do.
I agree, Mr. Wolseley.
Yeah, I do miss it. And but those are very small downs. The ups have been the change. So whenever I feel down or depressed here, I take it as a message from God who just goes, go outside and do something. And that can be walking a dog, or it can be mending something. Because also, if you have land, of which I have not very much, but I have a little bit of land, there's always something to do.
Yeah.
There's always something that needs mending. And, you know, you can spend hours mending things. So I've really enjoyed that change from panicky, expensive London to sustainable, in the genuine meaning of the word, rather than the woke meaning of the word, living, and to listen, to be able to share. I don't want to call it a burden, because I think burden is the wrong word. Suffering. And I think suffering, I'd love to know the derivation of suffering. I should know, really. But the suffering of life, you know, with someone who you actually rate their opinion on, whether you rate it in the moment or not, and to be able to go, to be able to say, okay, well, I'm really upset about this. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, let's talk about it. Yeah. And, you know, having long conversations about things that are, rather than like that sort of knee-jerk city, it's sort of like, it's kind of like my friend Jeffrey describes it as me being wired. He says, you're wired all the time. And people actually take the piss out of me on Twitter a lot and call me a cokehead all the time. But I am quite a wired personality. Mm. So it's been nice to have that lowered down. And then in the future, you know, we're getting married next year, man.
That's very exciting.
And it's, that's, you know, that's all of the things that comes with. And must have been divorced for the best part of 10 years. So I have actually. So it's to build something again. And yeah, there's so many things that I want to do in love, you know. And if you've had anyone who's had a failed marriage, or not a failed marriage, but a marriage that has broken down, will understand what that feels like. So to be able to have an opportunity to, you know, recenter yourself and to do it right and to do things in love, I think it has been so good. So, you know, like one of the kids was started saying shush yesterday to people who were talking when adults were talking. I was like, we don't say shush. They don't. But I said it in a calm way, where if I was in London and I had one of the days I'd had in London, I'd be like, we don't do that here. You know, so I've got it's sort of, and I think the other thing I've got to let go of is the shock of everything that's happened over the last few years for me personally, in a selfish way, and just go, you know what, your life is now exactly where it should be. Your path is the path that God wants you to be on. And if he doesn't want you to be on it, you'll get some fairly blunt reminders. And it's to allow yourself to feel, allow yourself to lean in. Oh God, I'm using woke language. But to lean
into space for it,
To hold space.
That's the one, hold space. I still don't know what that means.
Ask someone who wants to hold space for that fucking asshole who killed the leftist. So anyway, out of that, Loz, this, Loz. So I think that 2025, and I like it just as the 2025, I think 2025 is going to be a good year for all of us. And I think that means, I'm going to do it again, more woke language, the global community. Mm. I think the global community is led by the most civilized and advanced societies on the earth. I think that's the direction of travel is led by those people. And I think now that not the grown-ups are back in charge, but the people that aren't ideologically morphed and twisted demagogues that are out of charge, I think the world will heal. And there's a lot of that language online. I'm here and I'm in a place where I can heal because I can choose whether I want to engage with certain things, and that's for the better and the worse. So, and I have promised myself that by the end of, well, hopefully by the summer, but by the end of 2025, I will have finished my book.
Okay.
So that's what I'm going to do. But I've been having discussions about whether I can, you know, how honest I can be, because that's the other thing. I've got a problem with honesty. I'm just like, this is what I think about that. This is what I think about that. I know, because I apply the gun to the head rule about almost everything, don't I? It's like, is that good or bad?
Well,
so that's my thing. You know, no one can predict what's going to happen politically. No one can predict what's going to happen personally. You know, I mean, so that's where I'm at. I'd say I'm probably a million times more optimistic, even though I probably don't look it or sound it.
In a much better place than you were 6 months ago.
Yeah. So that's what I'm hopeful for. And also to the people that watch our conversations, write down in the comments what your hopes and dreams are for the years, because we would love to know them. And it's encouraging to have people who watch us and is so nice about what we say and to each other. And it's great to be able to share a friendship with you.
Yeah.
Not all aspects of our friendship, but quite a lot of them, to be fair.
I love reading those comments, actually. Sometimes I reply to them as well, especially on YouTube. It's a really nice community.
It is a nice community. We've built up a nice one, and we've gone over 120,000 subscribers. So we'll get up to, hopefully by the end of next year, we'll be at 250,000.
Wow.
And we will then, you know, take over the world. We'll buy some yachts, some helicopters. You are a Fox and Father truck. Yeah. Let's do, just before we finish up, let's encourage people to think about, oh, this is my intro into it. I did think that the way we could completely destroy the government is, and I know it has been captured already, so I know it's a pipe dream, but is to get people to put more and more of their money into cryptocurrencies. Ah. Or cryptocurrencies would be great. And you said, which means you've got something to say.
No, I just realized where you're going.
Yeah. So more and more, if you took 10% of your income and put it in crypto, which I would never do at the moment, but I now have enough money to buy a car, by the way, having put in $2,500, I can now go and buy a car if I wanted to. If you took 10% of your money away from the government, they'd go bankrupt in a minute. The same can be said for other forms of transferable currency. Could be potatoes, could be anything, but it could be gold. Go to gold. I did promise you that we had a new sponsor.
Yes.
Sponsoring the Fox and Files show, because apparently this company, Gold Bullion Partners, and a few of our listeners have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and what where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they've come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too. My gold's a little one.
So the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank, and you can't rely on it. You can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah. Non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
I wouldn't want to spend it though.
No, I'm just saying.
Well, a lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore. And that's part of the problem. That the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in Absolutely. The world. And in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know, Gold Bullion Partners, guys, the link will be in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to...
Absolutely. Do your own research. Look into it.
Yeah. And we will carry on buying it ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
And there we have it. Calvin.
Yeah.
So you've got Dennis coming over. You're coming over to England. Are we going to see each other when you're in England?
Yeah, I should think so. That'd be nice. Let's have another Christmas dinner or something.
What's your message to everyone? What do you want to say to them?
My message is very simple. Have a blooming lovely Christmas. It's been an interesting few years, but things are starting to look up. Things are starting to get better. Me and Lawrence did a video a couple of years ago and said, you know, times are dark, but the light will shine in the darkness. And I feel like it really is now. The light's been switched on. So be hopeful, be optimistic. And if you're looking for a place to get hope, this is a good time of year to be reminded of where you can get that hope, because God loves us. God loves us all so much that he gave his only begotten son who died for us. But before he did, he was born in a manger, humble beginnings. And this nativity story is what we remember at Christmas. And so if you're feeling lost, lonely, upset, depressed, angry, whatever it is, this is a good time of year to be reminded of the greatness and the glory that is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and how much he loves us. He loves you as an individual with all his heart. So find faith in him, find hope in him.
And that, as they say, is that. Have a lovely Christmas and New Year.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.